Oh, Marty Minus, she's been an AGM day. How bloody good is it? It's a random day. We're a bit late, but let's bloody rip in, boys. So we've got some AGM chat thoughts, attendances to go through. Hey, Strandline. Trav.
Oh, wow.
There. Yeah. Let's just leave it at wow, and we'll expand on the wow. A bit more on Orcorp. Bit of,
we called it.
You've called it. You've pretty much essentially made it happen. I've gone on the most random Google rabbit hole while I was just waiting for Trav to get back from a little mystery AGM. It doesn't make sense, but it's happened and it's coming out. You're going to get weirded out.
I got no idea what to expect in this show because I haven't had time to read the show notes.
Mate, don't worry about that, buddy. Metro, mine and JD.
Yeah, hold on to your seat for that one, mate.
Oh, geez, it is a cracker.
All righty, let's get to it.
Oh, speaking of holding on to your seats, well, you don't need to because this company doesn't hit turbulence ever. Brooks Airways, the new player in the FIFO transportation industry, and by transport I mean via air. Not cars, by air. Underground. You know an underground miner? They love a Land Cruiser. They love spending their FIFO money on Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
Brooks own 7 Land Cruiser equivalents that fly.
Why are they similar?
The King Air. They just don't break. Like, yeah. They're like the Land Cruiser of the sky. Mate, bloody reliable, safe as a bloody house. Brilliant. And that's what you want.
You absolutely
they
do.
Can land on a good runway, obviously.
Obviously.
But they can also land on a shit unsealed runway, and there's heaps of them. Bloody FIFO for the goldfields throughout WA. All aboard Brooks Airways, I say, boys. That's bloody sensational.
You've been writing more poetry, mate.
Luxury seating in the plane and in the terminal.
It looks flash.
What a bloody service. 1300 Airway. Money miners. Give them a buzz. And Jesus Christ, if that's not enough, and like hypothetically, if you're just one of those rich as fuck people that's bloody made shitloads out of Azure or Wildcat or early investors in Patriot or Liontown. Oh, even the Spartan at 10 cents. Bloody spend your money wisely and hire a Brooks Learjet. Make good use of your funds. Travel in style. They've got Learjets as well. What more could you want?
I reckon that's wicked. Treat yourself.
Use that shareholder profits. Go get a Brooks Learjet.
Take some chips off the table and go for a spin.
Oh, speaking of putting chips on the table, JP Search. They put the chips on the table for anyone in the finance, M&A, any in that little niche part of the world. They pretty much said, here's a job, here's the chips on the table. This is what we do.
Yeah, but they do a bit more than just finance. They do some stuff for consulting firms as well.
You should give them a call, Trav.
Trav, mate, what do you reckon we engage some consultants for Money of Mine? You love a good consultant.
Yes.
And if we do, we'll get JP Search to do it for us. They're actually looking for some consultants, Trav. You might be able to help them on the interviewing process.
Yep.
Weed out what's a good and a bad consultant.
Charlie Munger's got some interesting commentary on management consultants, doesn't he, JD? You know about them.
He does.
Yeah.
Is this popped up in the recent interview?
No, it's one that I've listened to.
An older one.
Yeah, an older one.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at
that. Yeah, geez, that was real informative, Trav.
No worries.
Mate, they're looking for someone that's had a bit of like an analyst, associate, consultant that wants to break into strategy and M&A. Bloody mate, this job pays as good as MBB. You know what that means?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Do you know what that means?
I do now. Did you know what that meant?
Yes.
McKinsey, Bain, BCG. Yeah. So they're pretty high paying mobs.
They're the three.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, love it. So, mate, if you're, as Zav said last week, really bloody smart.
Ready, bloody smart.
Or very fast paced. I should just play him. And excellent problem-solving skills.
Outstanding problem-solving skills.
Give JP Search a buzz.
I'm excited. I hope, wicked. Well done, mate.
Yeah, bloody phone. Who didn't turn their phone off? That was me. Sorry, boys. Righto, let's rip in. We floated around some AGMs today. Ali GC or Ali AG's AGMC. No, that doesn't work. GC went to, she went to West Garden Remelius. Trav and I went to Spartan. What's I guess GC reckons Remelius main man, Mark Zepney, he reckons they're still looking for their third hub, not from a lack of effort, but remain persistent. Now, the third hub would be thinking in that Rebecca.
Yeah.
Carasu Dam region.
Carasu Dam sort of thing, or maybe will they look for a third hub until that comes available, and a third hub before that comes available? Who knows?
Yeah, not being a secret, and they've been pretty active on the M&A front over the past
six deals in five years or something like that.
Six years.
Phenomenal number of deals, yeah.
What was it, GC? How many deals they do? Seven in 6 years.
They don't use bankers, by the way. Just use lawyers.
Yeah. Well, if you're that active on the M&A front, you want to keep the fees down. Maybe it's a smart thing to do. And you guys went down.
They know a bit about it by now.
Yeah. You guys went down to the Spartan AGM.
Oh, mate,
as
from money of mine, but as a shareholder. Yeah,
ding, ding, ding.
As a shareholder, I wanted to go to Spartan. So,
what were the takeaways, mate?
Oh, just. It was a pretty quick AGM, but I thought once they opened the floor up, I thought I'd ask a question because Johnny Hodder was up there, non-executive director, who is Tembo, one of the major shareholders. I thought I'd pose a question about if a takeover offer come in, whose scrip was being offered, would that be a big factor in looking or taking these deals? They obviously played it all with a straight bat and said no offers that had been made, and if they come in, we'd analyse them accordingly, yada, 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 which is obviously what the response was. So, because remember, Tembo and Delphi, they got the ropes with 33.8% of Spartan. What I was getting at was on the back of Westgold's news yesterday of this 100 mil revolving facility, if Westgold put in a bid, which you would assume majority would still be scrip, would they want Westgold scrip with their Westgold capital going into Great Fingal, a lot of development down there, not many drill holes because it's drilled from the surface, or would they prefer Remelius scrip? Who knows what the 100 mil's for. Couldn't even be for Spartan.
Yeah,
they could be looking at something in Tasmania or Russia or something. Who knows? But it's a mystery. But we have our eyes peeled, money miners.
That's it. In the meantime, we can speculate.
Mm.
Now, there's been an interesting phenomenon, not a new one, that's sort of popped up around AGM season, and we want to talk about it a little bit, don't we, Trav?
Oh yeah, I love this stuff. Well, I don't love it. It's bad, but I love seeing it pop up. I'm like, I know what's going on here.
I love finally learning all the tricks. You know, like we said, this one's not a new one, but we'll run the money miners through it if they're unfamiliar with this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this one is like when you vote for your AGM, the notice of meeting comes about a bit over a month before the actual AGM. In which case You get the opportunity to vote before. Most people vote before. They'll, you know, vote online or the rest. So there's a good idea of how that vote is actually going to go for each resolution ahead of time. And those votes do become available to directors before the AGM. And of course, revealed throughout the AGM right before the vote. You see what the current votes for via proxy are. And it is kind of interesting, right? Because if you think of it that way, directors have a bit of an informational advantage, well, not advantage, but the informational insight before shareholders get to see it about how certain resolutions might be looking to get voted on or voted against. In some cases, those resolutions actually pertain to re-election of directors, right? And around this time of year, you quite often see directors resigning the day before an AGM, the day of an AGM in some instances. And I think some of that is a little bit of save face to avoid the, you know, the embarrassment of a potential, shareholders voted not to re-elect you.
That's what I'd do. I wouldn't. If you sacked me, I wouldn't do today's show.
Just go out on your own terms, mate.
I'm just nah, I'll do my own show. I'll go solo, get it up quickly.
I'm not sure the one we're going to talk about today is specifically that case. I think there's some wording in the announcement that it's, you know, not that case. There's other factors that go into it. I bloody haven't been here for the show notes, JD, so I'll let you talk about it.
It's a good segue into what we're going to talk about now, which is Strandline. So they chucked up two announcements right before the meeting, one being related to board restructuring and another a Cockburn mine update. So the stock of Strandline has been sliding for months now. They've been struggling to get the asset, Cockburn. This is a mineral sands asset. north of Perth a fair bit, you know, right. They got the constructed in a great way, like on time, on budget, in a really tough period. But since they've started mining, it hasn't gone well for them. So, you know, the stock has slidden, and by the end of October, to sort of address things, they put the stock into suspension, and it hasn't traded since. So on the board restructuring, they've announced there's going to be a new chair who was previously a non-exec director. Three directors have left effective today. Now, to your point, Trav, they did point out that two of them had received overwhelming support from the shareholders, but nevertheless, they're leaving anyway. So that leaves them with a board of three people now. They've also addressed the fact that, you know, operations aren't going well. They've got a host of new managers coming in to fix that. And on the operations front, they highlighted that they'd had poor equipment availability, they'd had issues with tailings. The wet concentrator plant has had downtime throughout October. It sort of improved into November. But this all resulted in lower heavy mineral concentrate, or HMC, being produced through October. So they only produced 4,500 tonnes in the month of October, which is a pretty, you know, shockingly low number given where they should be. Like, they had reduced guidance, but if you look at where they initially said, once they'd finished constructing the mine, they were meant to be at nameplate capacity by now. So things haven't been going well. And you have the follow-on issue of not producing enough of that HMC, leading to the MSP, which is the second part of the plant. Just think of it that way. Like, they're not being able to commission that properly because they're not getting enough stuff, and it's not been able to run for long enough. So they've ultimately said that they're going to stay in suspension. They are reviewing funding requirements, which is never something you want to read. And this all relates to, you know, potential breaches of the debt covenants, which, you know, they were pretty generous terms, the debt, but there are covenants around that, and they don't want to breach that. So they're speaking with the lenders, they're trying to sort all that out, and they're going to remain in suspension in the meantime. So hopefully, you know, they can address these issues, they can fix, you know, all the various things that are going wrong, and they can become a profitable mine. But yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath on it just yet.
Mm. Yeah, sort of needs a bit of a funding package to come together to see that relist and some support from their existing lenders. I think they've got NAIF, who will be supportive to the extent that there's a visibility at the end of the tunnel. And then I think there's a Nordic bond component to their debt.
There is,
debt stack as well, who might not be as flexible, but other funding components might have to work around that.
Yeah.
Right, boys, yous are on the money with OreCorp. Jesus Christ, that's why everyone comes to Money and Mine, mate. It's the bloody expertise coming out of you two, two gobs.
Yeah, so Trav covered it really well yesterday. And, you know, one of the angles we put forward that it could be a bit of a bluff from the major shareholders trying to get a bit of a better price. Lo and behold, one day later, they have got a better price. So the cash component in the bid from Silvercorp to take out OreCorp has been raised. So it was previously 15 cents plus 0.0967 Silvercorp shares per OreCorp share held. And that's been lifted to 19 cents with the scrip component remaining the same. So if you look at
$0.04 kicker.
Yeah. And if you look at the deal all in, it values the OreCorp shares at 54.3 cents. So they advertise that as a 12% premium to the previous close. Although if you do look at the initial deal that was announced, that was a 60 cent. But given the scrip component isn't looking as pretty as it was in August, the total value has come back a bit. Nevertheless, I think the major shareholders will be quite happy, because you can see on page two of the announcement that Tim Goyder and Nick Giorgetta, two really big names in the WA mining community, both support the revised scheme. So they've both signed voting intention statements, which means, you know, that they're happy with the way the revised deal looks.
And there's this thing called truth in takeover, so you can't actually make that statement and then redact it. You're going to have to stick to your word.
You have to stick to your word. Yeah, so
Is that a rule, mm-hmm. truth in takeover?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So the shares are trading at 50 cents now, and the implementation is scheduled for the 22nd of December. So that's less than 1 month away. I'm sure there's some fundies out there eyeing up a bit of an opportunity out there. The scheme meeting is still set to go ahead on the 8th of December. So the timeline hasn't really been pushed at all there. So it's going ahead pretty quickly now.
Yeah, good work. Bloody, these are the new Nostradamuses. you've taken the mantle, the trophy off me for predicting the future.
Matty, yeah. You're going to make me blush. Let's get on to another one. Hastings came out with a funding update.
Late yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah. Which
always means it's a good news.
Yeah. Great news. Aftermarket, the share price came off, as you'd expect.
So right. What happened?
They announced an at-the-market equity financing facility, which we had a chat about today, Trav. We've seen a few more of these. They're a bit more of a North American phenomenon, but starting to see a few more of these down here. So this was for a total of $50 million.
$50.
50 bricks, mate.
Bricks, bucks.
So there's a quote in the top of the announcement: to provide working capital funding flexibility as the project financing process is advanced. So it's a bit of a funky one, but you can kind of think of it as an equity raising as you want. You know, you can incrementally draw on that 50 million. The shares would be issued at a 5% discount to a chosen VWAP, or a price floor, which we don't actually know, whichever's higher of the two. So the facility lasts for a 4-year period, and Hastings have the sole discretion to use it. They've just had to pay $25,000 to set up the thing, and they can terminate it when they want. And they've also had to put collateral forward of 6.5 million shares.
So can they incrementally issue those options issue the shares whenever they want.
Yep. Yeah. That's right.
Whenever they need them.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. I can't quite figure out these facilities. You've seen a fair few of them pop up lately, and I know they're popular in North America, a lot more popular than they are here, but I can't quite work out like who's better off, who's worse off, and is the stock actually going to like a natural owner of the stock, or is there some, you know, like financial incentives where some people can just make risk-free returns at the expense of existing shareholders? I don't know how all this stuff works yet, but I'd love to learn.
Yeah. So we don't know. Is it not like it's not the retail buying these new shares issue,
it's a specific group called AIP. So they're the ones. So I mean,
Every time they're issued those shares, they're buying them.
But this AIP specializes in these at-the-market facilities. Yep. So to me, that sounds like they're not a natural owner of the stock, and they're probably trying to create some sort of financial return for themselves by hedging out risk,
That's probably reflective of the tough spot that Hastings find themselves in at the minute, that they've had to go to a group like AIP.
So speaking of rabbit holes, Trav, I think you should head down that one.
I think I will. I'll come back with some info.
So
I look forward to that.
On the project financing that Hastings have been looking to wrap up, they've said they've received multiple non-binding proposals. They're targeting 60% debt. And they're also holding the hand out for this federal government funding that was recently bumped up $2 billion. So it's an interesting one because they've already invested $126 million in early works. They've signed a $210 million deal with GR Engineering, but they're essentially building the plant and everything without being fully funded. It's not something I've seen an awful lot of. So the next step that the company said is that they're going to shortlist their preferred financiers and lenders from the proposals that they've received. But if you look at their presentation from October, just last month, you can see they need $312 million to be spent. And that's just for stage one. This came after the big, revision where they broke it into a couple of stages. So one potential solution would be to look at the JV options or the partnership options that they say they've received from various mining funds out there. And that would essentially mean they're selling a portion and they'd have to fund less of it.
Take a breath, Jada. You're on bloody fire cover.
I could feel you're about to say something, Matty. You're on the brink. So looking at the market cap of Hastings, this sort of, is what I'm talking about when them not being in a great position at the moment. They're capped at $104 million. They've got cash of $67 million, plus they're holding Neo Performance Material shares worth $70 million. So those ones halved from about a year ago when they bought them. And they've got these Wyloo convertible notes, which we've spoken about in the past. That's essentially debt of $150 million. So Not an envious position you'd want to be in, and it doesn't give you a strong foundation to negotiate any sort of deal from.
Mm. Oh, rare earths are out of flavour at the moment. Bloody month or so ago, flying. Anyway, they might be back next month.
Matty, I've spoken far far too much now. You did a bit of a dive into TG6, which is...
It wasn't even a dive.
From the notes here, I can see a bit of a dive, mate.
It has gone so random because I just noticed one thing at the start of the day, and then we were waiting for the return of Ricciardo from his mysterious adventure. So I'm like, I just sort of started following Google. You know, you just... It can take you to some weird places.
It can,
and
mate.
I'm about to take the Money Miners on a weird journey, and you too. Please, please don't hit me after this. So I saw TG6 were – sorry, JC. TG6 were raising money this morning, the new little lithium bolter. They're raising
$6.
They're raising $6. ability to subscribe overs of $2 at 75 cents. I found it interesting that it was a now the info I've got is there was a bit of a little there was a Perth media transaction
that we weren't involved in.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, some of the tenements, not the tenements that were they've found the lithium on, but some of the tenements were sold to Vertical Events founder Stewie McDonald, who's a major shareholder in TG6, by Bulls and Bears founder Matt Burney via this Black Resources Proprietary Limited for $180,000. That is, I couldn't confirm it on Google, but I've been told.
Oh, so this is word on the decline.
That's word on the decline. but the other tenements that were, I guess, sold and vended into this TG6 where the lithium was found. The lithium's found on this 1997 tenement. That was purchased from Matlock Geological Services for $130,000. Now, Matlock Geological Services was owned by Bernard Allwood.
And to be clear, that's where lithium has been hit on that.
That's term. On that 1997 one. They're the ones he sold.
So all right. So
he's probably thinking, oh, geez, wish I had them. now this Bernard Allwood was the exploration manager for Croesus Mining. Have you heard of that?
Yep, I have indeed, mate. That's Snellsman.
Yeah, I know. This is all new to me. So you might just go to sleep. I'll wake you up when I'm finished. Now that Croesus Mining got nominated for 2002 Deal of the Year when they purchased half the Central Norseman project from Western Mining for $75. But after having this Deal of the Year, they then went into administration in 2006 after failing to meet their hedging requirements at Norseman.
Matty,
not enough rock for the mill.
Can you tell me that Deal of the Year was that awarded in the same year the deal was done?
Nah, they got nominated for that deal. No, I think it was later. I don't know. Don't ask too many questions. I was confused by the end of it. I don't know. It doesn't sound like they got it, but they were nominated for it. They probably got it. Should I confirm that?
Oh, no. It's...
Right, I just did a quick Google edited it out of the video. Nominated at the start of 2003. So for 2002 deal. Right, where the bloody hell am I up to?
Sorry to cut you off, Matty. I've just read ahead in the show notes, and I'm thinking that this story is going to come back to the like. There's going to be some.
No, it's gone. It's a rabbit hole.
It's just a rabbit hole.
It doesn't come back anywhere. That's what I'm saying. It's fucking so bad.
That's why it's a hole, mate. You just go deep and deeper.
I love it.
No. I told you. It's not good. Right, anyway,
so what happened next?
Okay, so they've. This Croesus, they got voted for Deal of the Year in 2002. They voted in 2003. But then in 2006, Croesus went into administration.
So deal's not looking another, so good another anymore. Deal of the Year.
Couldn't meet their hedging requirements. So this Norseman Gold PLC then acquired it and operated it until 2014, and then it went into care and maintenance. So another failed attempt at Norseman. Norseman Gold PLC major shareholder was?
Tullar.
Tullar Resources. Now, Tullar, who's the money at Tullar?
Big Kevin Maloney.
Maloney family. So they $340 they got for the sale of their mining services firm, Mac Services Group, to a US oilfield services company.
Yep, you'll and find you know him that on the
Tullar,
rich list.
And that Tullar was actually invested in Sumo Salad.
I didn't know that.
Sumo Salad. Wow. I think he was on the board for it too. Wow. Yeah, wow. Sumo Salad, the Tullar Group. Anyway, so they're in administration 2014. Pantoro then bought their 50% stake off them in 2019. Yep. So that was like $55 cash, scrip and royalty deal total.
Yep.
We had a deal with Tullar. But so Norseman Gold PLC then changed its name to Tullar Resources in 30 December 2020. A few months later.
Did it change its name or was it?
Yeah. No, so I think it I got this off the Tullar announcement. Okay. So they changed the name of the private company to Tullar Resources. Then 3 and a bit months later, Tullar Resources IPO'd.
Gotcha.
Guess who's on the register for the Tullar Resources IPO? It's a 0.83% shareholder.
I did not know this.
Tell me, mate.
Robert Friedland.
Wow. The one and only.
The one and only, Ivanhoe's Robert Friedland. And they opened 29% down when they IPO'd. Then Tullar merged with Pantoro. Doesn't link back to the original story at all. This is just where Google took me. But I found out Robert Friedland.
Matt Burney to Vertical Events to another transaction, another part to the exploration manager. And where was he working? And then that led to Norseman, which led to the history.
Which led to Robert Friedland.
Love it, mate.
So we learn about Robert Friedland in Tullar. There you go.
We've got to give you bloody 3 hours like every day to just like go down a rabbit hole and then just – like record it.
You got no idea how long that took me to bloody confirm all that weird shit.
Well done, man.
Right. Speaking of other breaking news, Metro Mining.
I don't know how I'm going to live up to that one, Matty. I'll try my hardest. So they had record production of 4 million tonnes of bauxite shipped so far in 2023. So they've got the Bauxite Hills mine up in the very northern tip of Queensland, and they're targeting 4.5 to 5 million tonnes for this year and then 7 million tonnes next year. Although, as you'd expect to ramp up by that much, it's going to cost them a bit. It's going to cost them 32 million Aussie. And for that, they have raised US 30 million in debt with a group called Nabari. And Matty, this links to your story. Mm-hmm. Nabari, if that sounds familiar, they've put funding into Pantoro, into Tullar, into Cyprium and into Jervois. So, you know, really cream of the crop companies.
So about to say, what's common with all of them?
Your words, not mine. So the rate that Nabari is charging Metro Mining, MMI, is probably, you know, pretty reflective of the risk. They're charging SOFR plus 9%. And they were charging Pantoro from memory, SOFR plus 8%.
Yeah.
So that's about a... You know, in Metro's case, 14 to 15% interest rate. That is hefty. So bauxite, obviously key component in the alumina and the aluminium process. It's a bulk. So economies of scale is keyed. So getting to 7 million tonnes per annum smoothly and not too onerously should help pull down unit costs if they can achieve it.
JD, the thing I always remember about Metro Mining's bauxite operation is they're constrained to only actually operate in certain parts of the year because of the wet season. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the key risks being where they are, that they have those risks, they have the cyclone issues which can hit them. If you look on Google Maps just to the south, Rio Tinto's bauxite mines sit just to the south, but they don't have to put the stuff down a barge that goes down a river that then gets loaded out on the water onto a ship that goes to China. They can have the boats come into a port, and that just removes a whole level of risks. But
gotcha.
Yeah, the freight is another risk that you're exposed to. And I'm not sure if you guys remember, but in 2021, freight costs just went through the roof.
Yeah.
They hit them really, really hard. And, you know, whilst Metro Mining is still alive, they haven't really recovered. The share price is down a long way from what it was a few years ago. So if you get into the costs, you've got the total cost made up predominantly of site costs plus the freight. So site costs, they're hoping to get down from $25 per wet metric ton to $19. And total costs, you know, they're sitting at about $48 per wet metric ton. So that gives them a $10 margin.
So that's actually $19.
Like that is $19.
$19, yeah.
Exactly. Right. This is a bulk commodity. So.
To all the money miners, Matty is going to refer to millions of dollars by saying bucks from now on.
Yeah, just to make things a bit more confusing. So that $10 margin that they do have per ton gets whittled away pretty quickly by CapEx and repaying all the debt that they have. So they ended the quarter with 21.6 bucks. But they started it at pretty much the same spot. So they're in a difficult spot. They've got 81 bucks in debt with four different lenders. They're paying between 12% and 14% on all of that. Like we said, they've got the risk of cyclones, the freight rates. They're exposed to a lot of risks on top of all the debt that they've got to repay. So
how many bucks of debt?
81, mate, 81.
81 bucks. They're,
81. They're not in the most enviable spot, but, you know, the tide has sort of turned from about 6 months ago. Like we said, record production is where we started this one. So things are on the up, but they're going to have to do a whole lot to get through to pay all that debt down and be a profitable miner over the long term.
I reckon recording a bit late when we're a bit fatigued, it gets weird. I think it's
You'd
good.
You'd have thought we'd had a can here.
I thought I'm having a can after this. I like it. It just adds a bit of an element. Yeah. We could have a new segment. Where will Matty end up? Like, give me a starting point and I'll just go on a Google rampage.
We should just lock you in that office there and see what you come up with.
I'll be like that in a beautiful mind. I'll have all have shit you, on the walls and everything.
Have
and
you ever watched like Bounce after like a game of footy on a Sunday and it's like there's that segment new numerology, I feel like that would be you.
Yeah, I reckon stick me in a room and give me some supplies and just see where I end up.
Give you some alone time.
Alone time and see a computer. I'm sure we could add some spice to it if needed.
Alrighty, on that note, we've got a couple sponsors to thank.
What a great day job. DSI Underground, Terra Capital, McMahon Mining Title Services, Future Proof Consulting, Anytime Exploration Services. Take it away, JD.
KCA Site Services, JP Search.
Finish it off,
Brooks Rav. Airways, NK Drill.
Good energy, good times. Hootaroo Money Mine.
Cheers, sponsors. Hootaroo. Hootaroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.